Bonjour. Welcome to this new episode of So French, the show about the twists and turns, intrigues and insights to all things French.
Every 2 weeks, we select the best, most interesting and fascinating of French news stories, all brought to you from the heart of Paris.
And bonjour also to all of you listening on World Radio Paris, the digital radio station in the Paris region. So French is broadcast every second Saturday on 5:30 p.m. and then rebroadcast throughout the week. You can check out the rest of WRP's programs on worldradioparis.fr.
My name is Sara Bertilsson.
And my name is Stefan de Vries.
And this week, as a heat wave hits the country, we make a dive into the muddy waters of European politics. And we ask the question, what Europe would look like or will look like under the new French president?
Yeah, will Emmanuel Macron be a refreshing force? Or will the warm relationship between Germany and France cool down once the UK leaves the Union?
And of course, Mont de Camp brings us a steaming hot French word of the day.
But first, we have a new government. Again.
Again!
The second in 1 month already.
Is this some kind of record? I don't know.
I'm not sure, but it's quite normal that after, of course, there were general elections last week, and then the next day a new government, well, the old government resigns, even if it's only a very new government. So it's more of kind of formality, usually. But this week it was, well, there was a real change. The new government, Edouard Philippe number two, had to let go of four ministers. Four important ones as well. So it was a small scandal, political turmoil. It was very hot, of course, this week. So maybe...
You think that added to the...
Yeah, maybe the brains didn't work very well either. So let's talk about what happened. So first of all, Richard Ferrand. We talked about him in the last episode, one of Emmanuel Macron's closest allies. He's involved in some kind of, well, a dodgy... real estate deal, not really illegal, but...
maybe not moral either.
Yeah.
I think that's sort of where we are
at
the moment.
So he had to leave, he had to resign, but in exchange he got the party leadership in the parliament of La République En Marche, Emmanuel Macron's party. But within En Marche, the new MPs are not very happy because they would like to vote about who is going to be their president in the assembly. So now... they already have one, and some new MPs are already complaining that maybe Emmanuel Macron is not very democratic. So he's gone. Well, he's gone from the government, but he's in the lower house. And then there was a trio,
the Modem trio that left their ministries, and it was the leader of the Modem party, François Bayrou. Who joined Emmanuel Macron sort of at the end of the campaign of the presidential election, but really gave him, I think, a boost for many that he decided to join forces with him.
Yeah, because before that, François Bayrou was basically the traditional, the historical center candidate for many, many years. He tried to become a president as well.
For many, many, many years.
For many years as well. And now, well, he's over 65, so he must have said, well, I'm not going to become president probably anymore. Let me support the new center candidate. And it gave probably Emmanuel Macron maybe some 10, 15 points in the election. So he was an important ally. He was appointed a justice minister over a month ago, and now he already had to resign. Why?
Well, because his party is involved in another scandal. It's called the Modem fake job scandal. We've been talking about the National Front fake job scandal and the Fillon fake job scandals. We have a bunch of them going on at the moment. But this is about how assistants in the party have been working for the party in France while at the same time, these are the allegations, at the same time being paid by the European Union, the European Parliament. So that is where it stands at the moment. There's an investigation ongoing. But since, François Bayrou is not directly, because he has never been an MIP, but one of his assistants apparently could be involved in this case. And since he's the leader of the party, and he says that he stepped down to be free to have to be able to defend himself and the party and to not be a burden for the government. But, you know, this also comes at the time, we must remember, this came just days after the general election, where Emmanuel Macron's party did win 310 seats something or like something that. Like yeah. that, a very comfortable majority, which means that the need for the modern party is a bit smaller than it used to be.
They have around 45,
than it used to be.
They have around 45 seats, so, well, it's an important support, but it's not really necessary to have a majority. Now, he left, the two other ones who left were Marielle de Sarnez. She was a Minister of European Affairs for 4 weeks, and before that she was a member of the European Parliament. And then Sylvie Goulard, she was the Army Minister, same thing, a Minister for 4 weeks, and a former MEP. So these people are gone. A new government took place on Tuesday or Wednesday this week. And of course, when there's a new government, they also need a new family photo.
Now, absolutely.
That didn't quite well either, did it?
Well, you know, we've had, you know, Le Roi Soleil in France before the Sun King. And now, apparently, the rumor says that we have the Jupiter President. At least that's what he's nicknamed nowadays, Emmanuel Macron. Jupiter, for his apparent resemblance, well, the god, the ancient god of thunder and earth.
Yeah, in Greek it's Zeus, huh?
Exactly. Yes. And he's also the god symbolizing law and order and irreproachable behavior and all of that. But so, to get back to this picture and the family photo of the new government, which ended up being a quite different story from other... This is something that happens every time there is a new government. But this time, well, first of all, they decided to take the picture not inside, that's what they normally do, but this time outside in the garden, and with, not as usually, the president on the front row, but this time as a planet and in the middle, and, you know, surrounded by the satellites or moons or whatever you want to symbolize it with. It was a quite interesting picture to look at.
Yeah, and the photographers who were there were not really happy because they were not allowed to take any photos of the moment that they were put in place. So they turned their backs to the ministers as a sort of strike. And then the girl who was in charge of the communications at the Élysée, she went to see them, what's going on. She was angry. But nevertheless, she gave in, and then the photographers were allowed to make photos. But then the ministers were already in place. So the photographers were pretty upset by the way Macron was treating them. And the last couple of weeks, the relations between the media and the new president have been, well, let's say a little bit tense. Yeah, so it's, well, we'll see what's going to happen with that topic. But at least there's a new government photo in the garden.
Just to say, because when you look at all of this happening with the relationship between Emmanuel Macron and journalists and photographers, it looks very much like a situation where we had in the US with Barack Obama, where you have a very controlled image of the president. I think that as with everything else with Emmanuel Macron's campaign and presidency, it's very inspired by the US. He has his own embedded photographer that posts these immaculate, very beautiful,
very nice black
pictures,
and white photos,
black and white, what looks like these stolen images, or, you know, natural, just cliches taken, but, you know, of course, very, very thought through and chosen to show a certain qualities,
a certain idea of the presidency as well. So King Macron, the Jupiter King, but maybe he will finish just like Icarus.
Now, that's all domestic politics, but of course there is a world outside of France as well. And during the campaign, Emmanuel Macron, he described himself and sold himself as a very devoted European. He was pretty much the only one during this campaign to do so.
Absolutely. And during all his campaign meetings, you could see a lot of European flags. And I think that was really the only party meetings in Europe where you could see European flags. So it was pretty daring. And now this week he attends his first European Council. So that's the meeting, the regular meeting of all the heads of states and government in Brussels. They see each other very regularly. They already met in May at the G7 summit a couple of weeks ago. But this is the real first, you could say, the meeting of the European government.
And Emmanuel Macron, he has met several of these leaders, of course, both privately or one-on-one, and as you said, at the G7 meeting. So he already has a relationship with all these leaders. But it was still quite a lot of fuss about this first summit for Emmanuel Macron, especially here in France, but also from the other countries and outside of France, because, you know, there's a lot of hope on put on Emmanuel Macron in a sense that he would in some way be able to unite the European Union, which has been very, very split and, you know, halting over the last years.
Yeah, and especially since François Hollande, he didn't basically do anything on the European front. So all hopes are now on Macron's shoulders. He's going to talk about what he calls a protection agenda. He gave an interview this week with seven European national dailies, and he talked a lot about that Europe should protect the Europeans. It was not very clear to me what he meant exactly, but one of the things he think we should do is, for instance, to limit foreign takeovers in strategic areas like energy, banking, and technology. That's a typical French attitude as well, thinking that the state, you know, can protect those sectors. But still, it's interesting because a lot of people in Europe nowadays see, of course, the globalization and the Europeanization as a threat to their jobs. So he's pretending or presenting it like Europe is going to protect the citizens. It may work.
And that the threat is further away, actually.
Yeah, the threat is outside, yes. Like China or the US. And he has some support from Germany, but Germany is, of course, a very international economy and doesn't really believe in state, you know, protection. It's a mix of very liberal market, but also social, just like Scandinavia or the Benelux countries. But nevertheless, Merkel seems to be interested in what he has to propose. And then Italy, also one of the six founding members, is supporting Emmanuel Macron. So it could be an interesting meeting. So that's on the agenda. Probably they will talk also about other topics like terrorism. And of course, the Brexit, what's going to happen with Brexit, because the negotiations started this week. Important topic. Theresa May will also attend the meeting, of course. But after her severe election, well, she won, but it was considered,
I think we
defeat.
Can say it was a defeat.
Yeah, it was a defeat. Yeah. I don't think there's still one European leader who will take her seriously. So it's going to be an interesting meeting, the first meeting for Emmanuel Macron in Brussels.
Vous écoutez So French.
You are listening to So French.
Something else has pretty much been on everyone's mind here in France this week.
Burning through my heart, I can't keep on crying, it's tearing me apart. Whenever you call my name,
incredibly hot.
Hot, as you say in France.
Oui. It was the warmest temperatures for since 1945, probably since ever in June, because, well, sometimes we have heat waves in France, but it's in late July or August, but in mid-June, that was really crazy. Huh? It was also the warmest night in history this week, over 30 degrees at night. It was
and people incredible. And people have been struggling, we must say that. And, you know, this thing that this heat wave, I mean, as you mentioned, France is not a complete novice to heat waves. It happens almost every year, but normally in the month of August or in late July.
And two, 3 days in a certain region.
Exactly. Yeah. But this year, happening in June, with all the schools are still going, people are working. It has been a really hard time. And you must remember also many of the schools here in France, they don't have air conditioning. It's old buildings. It's very, very difficult for the students and for other, and for adults as well, of course, but especially for the students who must go to school and stay
and do
in
exams as well, because the back,
exactly,
the baccalaureate, the big exams are these weeks. So it was really hot, and it's going to stay, well, it will be not as hot next week, but it's still, the temperature really high. And of course the farmers, they have a real problem, because it's already been very beautiful weather since the beginning of May. It's very dry. So they're in trouble. It's not good news, and I'm afraid we will see more of these very high temperature episodes much more regularly, of course, in the next decades.
And this, of course, brings us to our word of the day, and Maud Descamps is joining us. Hello, Maud.
Hi, Stephen. Hi, Sarah. Yes, canicule, also known in English as heat wave. You know, we've experienced this week in France really high temperatures. Actually, we had the hottest temperature since 1872 in some part of the country. So let's have a look at the word canicule. No surprises, it comes from Latin. Its roots are Latin. It actually comes from the word canicula, which means little dog or puppy. Weird, huh? Well, you'll see, I love the story around this word, actually. Well, there is a very rational explanation for that. In the antiquity, the heat wave period happened between the 24th of July and the 24th of August. So during this period, the sun and the canicula star, the dog star, known today as Sirius star, rised and set at the exact same time. So everyone thought that the dog star had an impact on the weather. So everyone agreed on naming this time of the year and this these big heat waves after the dog star. So everyone called it canicula.
Thank you very much, Maud. That was Maud Descamps with the French word of the day. Now, we're going to have a peek look into the future because this week the French authority or Bureau of Statistics released their projections for France for 2050.
Yeah, so that's in 33 years. 2050, France will be a country of old men.
And yeah. Women.
And women, of course. Yeah, people will get much, much older into 2050. The INSEE, the Statistics Bureau, thinks that over a quarter of the population in 2050 will be older than 65 years. That's about 20 million people. That's a lot.
That's a lot. And it will be interesting to see how that will actually affect politics, for example, and the influence, because we have seen up until now that, you know, the older population has very much been ignored by the authorities, and, you know, they're not always taken into consideration. But with this, with them being a bigger part of society and also coming from a generation that has been used of having their voices heard, there might be a change also in political and society.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also means, of course, that there will be a problem in financing the pensions, because there will not only be more older people, but they will also get older. For instance, nowadays, the life expectancy of a French woman is around 85 years.
Already the oldest in the world.
Very old. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And man around 78, something like that. And in 2050, it will be 90.3 years for women and 86.8 for men. So the French will live longer. There will be more older people. It's going to be one gray area in this country. Everybody's going to move much slower in the streets as well.
That could be a good thing, though.
That's true, yeah. Well, if there are more heat waves, then you will have to move slower. So everything is connected. But the country will also have more inhabitants than today. There are now 66.9 million people living in France. And in 2050, that will be 74 million. And since the population in Germany is decreasing, it probably means that France will be Europe's biggest country in terms of people living here in 2050. But what's interesting is that in 2050, the number of deaths will be higher than the number of births. That's also a change.
That's a change, because from now, France is one of the countries where you actually have more births than death. But that isn't the case in all of Europe, no. Must say. They have some countries, I think we have Germany, Italy, and a couple of other countries where actually it's already the case that more people die than are being born. France has always been pretty proud of their high birth rate.
Yeah.
It's part of the national pride, I must say. Several reasons for these high numbers. France has a very developed system of daycare, for example, and a long tradition of women working, of working mothers. But then, of course, also a country with strong Catholic roots and a history of big families.
Yeah, the family is very important, and the government is always has always been very active since Napoleon, actually, with the family.
Yes, and you have a whole system of, you know, to make sure that the families stay big. You know, you have tax cuts, subsidies for daycare, and even if you have more than, if you have three children, it's even cheaper to take the train.
Yeah, you have all kinds of advantages that don't exist in other countries. And the contrast with Germany is enormous, because the Germans make less and less children. And here is, well, it's the French are doing well. The north of Europe is doing fine as well. But so that's going to change in 33 years. There will be more people who are dying than newborns. And what's also interesting is that there are very different figures for all the different regions in France. So it's not a national trend. There are some regional specifics.
Yes, what this projection shows is that, you know, the Île-de-France, which is the Paris region, is likely to remain the most populated region in France. And, well, it's quite normal, but also France has a very centralized system. So, you know, if many job opportunities are in Paris, and we're in the Paris region, etc. And it will stay so, but, you know, it will be around 13 million inhabitants, I think they calculate, for 2050. But then you also have difference, as you say, you know, some of the regions will actually switch positions. For example, Brittany will overtake Normandy when it comes to number of people. And this will, and, you know, and Corsica is also having a big jump in the population numbers. And this might have an effect on how these different regions, the power game between these different regions. So we'll see how it plays out. But definitely it will change both domestic politics and, you know, the region, of course. I mean, if you have a region with a decreasing population, well, everything that comes with it when it comes to financial issues, etc.
Yeah, so if you want to become rich, we should now invest in retirement homes, because in 2050, over 20 million French people will be older than 65 years. Now we're looking to 2050, but let's take a closer look into the future, 2024. Then there will be a heat wave, of course, but there will also be something else going on. So Paris wants to be the Olympic host city in 2024, and that's why the city is celebrating this weekend the World Olympic Days with a lot of spectacular events.
Yes, it's not only France, it's the whole world actually celebrating this International Olympic Day. But it's taking a sort of special importance here in France and in Paris in particular, with this bid from France to host the 2024 Olympics. So in Paris, as we're recording this today, Friday, there are activities all over the city, and especially on the Seine, actually. It's part of the city that is usually not that, you know, developed or
used. No, it's a bit neglected. Yeah.
Exactly. But this weekend, we will see athletics on the Seine, if I understand it correctly. They're also using the Champ de Mars, which is the park just down from the Eiffel Tower. And, you know, the quays will be filled with activities as well. And, of course, this is all a big stunt, must say, to push even further this candidacy for the Olympics.
Yeah, and Emmanuel Macron is very much in favor of these Olympic Games. He already has said that he will go to Lausanne, where the International Olympic Committee is, in July to defend this candidacy. And in September, they decide in Lima, in Peru, which city is going to be, and Emmanuel Macron will also be there. So he's also playing his part. But actually, if Paris wins, it's not a big victory, because The only other candidate that's left is Los Angeles, because nowadays there are very few cities interested in organizing.
It's such a very expensive story.
Very expensive. There are stories about corruption. You know, there are many conflicts of interest. So the only two candidates for 2024 are Paris and Los Angeles. And the International Olympic Committee probably will decide in September to give the 2024 games to Paris and the 2028 games to Los Angeles. So basically, there's no competition. And it's very likely that in 2024, Paris will host the Olympic Games for the third time in history. First time was in 1900, second time in 1924, so a century ago. So that means that in 7 years from now, we will have the Olympic Games here in Paris.
Well, that wraps up this edition of So French. We hope you have enjoyed it. Please follow us on Twitter. It's at So French News. And if you have any suggestions or questions, please send us an email. Our address is sofrench@sofrench.news.
And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast in iTunes, SoundCloud, or in the TuneIn Radio application. And please share this podcast with your friends. If you like French music, check out our playlist on Spotify, which we update regularly. Just type in So French Podcast and then you will find the music Sarah and me, we like. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode of So French online and on air on World Radio Paris.
We hope you will join us then. Thank you for listening.
Au revoir.